Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, you're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com, or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we explore a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing great, doing great.
I've said that 250 times and
there's always room for improvement, and you just proved that, right? I mean, we can always get better, and we're getting better all the time. So
we're getting better. It was a funny moment there. It was the greatest period of what? Oh yeah, transformation. I remember now.
What is the next word?
It's all coming back to me. So how are things? How are things in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, it's good. I knocked out some continuing education I had to have for my profession today, which is always just a little bit dull. But I manage to learn something every time I do it. So it's a good day. And it's sort of a New Year's resolution every year. I'm going to get this thing done in January. You know, so I don't have to worry about it. And you know, it never fails. You know, I'm showing up for the last minute seminars along with everybody else. I don't know.
There you go. It's just lame plans, huh?
That's right.
Well, we can check in with you in January and remind you periodically that you need to be on top of it.
There you go. Every now and then you just bring it out and say, "Well, Stephen, have you done it?" And I'll let you be my conscience, my sponsor on that. So let me just, you know, Keep me reminded.
I'd be delighted, you know, to pester you about something, especially when, you know, there's no other role for me. I don't have to do anything. I just keep reminding you about it, right? That's exactly the kind of commitment I really like to take on. Well, I'm on the road this week, so we're not anticipating any kinds of technical difficulties, but it could happen because I'm not in my usual spot. So if we run into technical difficulties, you'll keep the show going and I'll dial back in. Not that anything like that is even remotely going to happen.
Yeah, let's stay optimistic. We had our glitch, in the intro. This week's glitch is
this week's glitch was off the air. Yeah, it happened before we started, so we're in great shape tonight. Well, I think because we've got so much ground to cover this evening, we're going to go ahead and bring out our guest. And he is someone we've mentioned on recent programs. He's a longtime listener to Fast Forward Radio. His name is Stuart Seligman. And this is an individual who's had an abiding interest in science and technology since, as a kid, he propped a telescope up in his backyard with his father, scanned the night sky, and tried to figure out how he could get up there. Stuart started his career as a Wall Street economic analyst and wound up in structured finance. He developed an expertise in using neural networks and genetic algorithms to solve financial problems. After working for money center banks and small investment firms, Stuart became an entrepreneur and was involved in starting several startups. He started a participatory discussion group at the Monmouth County Library in Monmouth County, New Jersey, that will discuss the scientific and technological changes that are occurring, the opportunities that they represent, and how perhaps to take advantage of them. Well, Stuart, welcome to Fast Forward Radio.
Great to be here, Steve and Phil.
Well, you know, thank you so much for listening to the show, and thanks for giving us an idea for a show here tonight.
Well, you're very welcome.
So you got in touch with me, I guess, it's been about 3 weeks ago, actually by leaving a blog comment over on The Speculist. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
And tell us what your basic idea was at that point.
Well, I wanted to reach out to the local library and try to convince them that there would be interest in starting a discussion group to talk about the technological and scientific changes that are occurring and what it all means to us and how we may utilize any kind of information that we can get by disseminating all the information that's out there. So the library was very responsive. I contacted the program coordinator. And she got back to me almost immediately and said, yeah, this is something that we'd really like to do. And we would be willing, or the library would be willing to provide facilities and to promote it.
Well, that is a really exciting idea. It's something, mm-hmm. Stephen, I know that we've talked about in the past is how would you get something like this going? And I think it's great, Stuart, that as a listener to the show, that you just took it upon yourself to make this thing happen. Now, so you've started this group, or have you guys had your first meeting yet, or when does that all kick off?
Tentatively, we're starting January 24th in the evening, about 7 p.m., and we'd like to do it on a monthly basis. The library, however, is very interested in putting it online, too. They're starting a new program, I believe, and putting a lot of the stuff that they do online. So for those who can't participate, who can't be there physically on a particular day in a particular time, but do want to participate in the discussions, that they will have access to it.
Oh, very cool. So what will they be? They'll be accessing a recording of the discussion, or how will that work exactly?
I'm not sure of that yet. I don't think that they got that far regarding the details. I do know that they do plan to promote it online and to actually have a registration process, because one of the things that I think is important is try to determine the size of the group. If you have a smaller group, say 8 or 10 people, then you can have one that's very participatory. If it's larger, if there is a lot of interest and you get, I don't know, 80 or 100 people, that's a different kettle of fish. So we're going to have to try to determine what the level of interest is. But after speaking with people, many have said that they would be interested and would like to attend. So we'll have to figure that out regarding how we should structure the meeting and the discussion process.
Well, Stuart,
I was just going to say, if you can get us contact information as you get it, I know I would like to participate online as best I could, and if it's like a online discussion forum or a recording of your meeting, I'd be very interested. I know other people listening to the show would as well. So make sure to get that to us as soon as you know it.
Absolutely, we want it to be a democratic process, so we want a lot of input. You know, we just don't want something where someone will sort of lecture and just present certain information. We would like for people to really think about what's being presented and to participate as much as they possibly can, so we can get different points of view. And we're hoping for sort of a broad mix of people, scientists and engineers, business people, people in the arts, students, high school and college students who may be considering a different career, or people who might want to change careers and want to determine where things are headed and what they perhaps should go into. So there should be, hopefully, just a broad spectrum of people and ages that are interested in these topics.
Well, one of the things we've maintained for some time, and that I would hope a group like yours will help to establish and to prove, is that these topics have a much broader appeal than people think they do. That there is a growing interest in accelerating change. There's a growing interest in how technology is impacting our lives daily, and I think that people are becoming increasingly aware of the fact that it's everybody's future, right? It's not just the it's not just the geeks anymore who think this way. It's increasingly something that we're all going to have to look to, and I would not be at all surprised to see a group like the one you're putting together quickly move into that other category of the larger groups, because I think it's going to appeal to a lot of people.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. I'd like to, if I could, quote John Maynard Keynes, the famous British economist from the 20th century, And he had a sort of an interesting quote here. He said, "The idea of the future being different from the present is so repugnant to our conventional modes of thought and behavior that we, or most of us, offer great resistance to acting on it in practice." And I think that's something that we wanted to address. How do we sort of change our mode of thinking? Because the world in the near future or the world tomorrow is going to be a lot different than the world that we've experienced. So I think we need a different mindset. And by addressing these issues, I think that's what we believe what we'll be able to broach.
And when we get into the next portion of tonight's show, which is going to be talking a little bit about how you might think about structuring the program or how you might approach this material, we're going to talk a little bit about how people's thinking needs to change. That is one of the core transformations on our list of the top 10 transformations that we discussed in the original World Transform series and also in the World Transform 2. So that quote is very much on track. I think that's the biggest transformation, if not in terms of the impact that it will have, but it's the one that's the most needed, is for people to start changing the way they look at this, for people to start changing the way they think about the future, and opening up their minds a little bit to some concepts that they haven't had time to think about before. And what a great opportunity to help people along in that process, putting a group like this together. Now, you're doing this, as you said, at your public library. Tell us how you got the idea of that venue, and did you think about doing it in other ways, or was that your original idea, and why do you think the library is the way to go?
Well, I think the library has always been sort of a meeting place, and I know our local library is here in Monmouth County, and Monmouth County actually has a whole library system. It's not just one library, but it's probably 12 or more, because Monmouth County is a fairly large county. So I thought it was just sort of a natural venue, and it's people who enjoy using the library facilities are those who would probably be interested or may be interested in these types of issues. So it just seemed like a natural place to go, and of course the library was very receptive to it, and it just took off from there. So we've been planning it for a couple of months. They've been very helpful. We're still in the planning stage, but certainly by the time January 24 rolls around, we should be all set to go. So,
very cool. Well, now you had shared with me a link to an article called "Libraries as the Commons for Creation." And Stephen, for some reason, I am not able to get on chat. But if you could share that link in the chat room, that would be awesome. This is a really interesting piece about kind of challenging our thinking a little bit about what libraries are and why they exist. And we were talking about this a little bit before the program, and I think I may have mentioned this last week when we started previewing this week's show. Is libraries, public libraries, perhaps have the opportunity to fill a lot of the functions that we've been talking about, Stephen, particularly in your model of the coffee shopification of the future, that a library is maybe a pretty good coffee shop in its own right, in that it's a public space where people can get together. There's internet connections there. It's understood as a place where people can meet. It's understood as a place where people can share ideas. And it's very interesting to read in this article that's really a lot of the original thinking behind libraries. We think of libraries as collections of books, and if they offer a program such as the one, Stuart, that you're starting to put together, that's some extension of their mission, that's some new fangled thing that they're doing. But if you read this piece, it sounds like it's actually very much in keeping with what libraries were originally intended to be, much, much more a kind of a creative common area, an idea sharing area, than necessarily a collection of reading materials.
Yeah. Are you still there, Stuart?
I'm still here.
Okay. You know, in that particular article, Phil, you know, it talked about not just, you know, like you said, not just books, but it mentioned things like going forward, things as you know, outlandish right now as 3D printing. Well, you know, that's obviously it's not going to be outlandish for long, but I mean, that's the sort of thing that it's going to be. There's going to be a need for things that are, you know, bigger than better than what we can have in our own homes. Even if we get 3D printers in our homes, you know, there's going to be a limit as to what they can accomplish, as opposed to something a more of a commercial, larger machine. And obviously, that's going to be something to bring people into libraries as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's to me, it's really interesting to read this in this article that Benjamin Franklin, back when he was in a sense laying the groundwork for the public library system that we have in the U.S. today, saw it very much as a social gathering place, kind of a public commons, kind of what we think of as Starbucks or Barnes & Noble as being today. And there's this great quote from Jeff Pearl, the director of the Allen County Public Library, and he says, we see the library as not being in the book business, but being in the learning business and the exploration business and the expand your mind business. We feel this is really in that spirit, that we provide a resource to the community that individuals would not be able to have access to on their own. And yeah, I agree completely, Stephen, that increasingly we're going to see libraries expanding that charter back to the original idea, back to the original concept. And I think that can take a lot of very interesting forms, but certainly as a hub for the burgeoning maker community, that's a really interesting idea. And I think as a place where singularitarian type ideas, accelerating change ideas, awareness of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, a place where those ideas begin to go mainstream, it seems like a really good fit.
Yeah, absolutely. It sort of is an extension of the whole educational system in a way. So it could perform a very useful service, no question.
So go ahead,
Stephen. I was just going to say, you know, my thought on this is that we're going to have to change some of the ways that we think about libraries. It can't be a place that the first time, you know, somebody makes a sound, they're shushed. You know, obviously you can't have any kind of meeting if that's the case. So I'm sure in your library there's probably separate meeting rooms for what you guys are going to be doing. But can you imagine? I mean, 3D printers or other for the maker community, how noisy that could potentially be. Obviously, they'll have to be either separate spaces, or people are just going to have to get used to a little more noise in the library.
Yeah, well, actually, in our library, there were, on every Sunday, there were jazz concerts and sometimes even rock concerts. So the facility is set up where you can do that. And actually, and there are other quiet spaces as well. So you can – they had a band that covered all the Rolling Stones stuff. And as they were playing away, you could still go to areas of the library and it was quiet as anything. So they're set up for that, which is great.
That's very cool. I note in the chat room that Sean Thurrett says that he's performed many times in libraries. Our professional singer, regular listener and chat room participant. So definitely there's a lot more going on than just Mrs. Grundy shushing people for being too loud. Although that reminds me, the Boulder Future Salon, when I was able in my previous employment situation, I had better access to Boulder than I do today. I would go to that just about every month. And that group used to meet, Wayne Rudinsky, of course, is the founder of that, and he's been a guest on this program. That used to meet in a bookstore up in Boulder. And I know at least a couple of times the discussion got so animated that we had bookstore employees come around and tell us that we needed to tone it down just a little bit because this is a bookstore effort. I mean, we had permission to be there and everything, but it was a bit much for the for the normally kind of quiet atmosphere there. So I think as long as the space is dedicated to people talking or there's an understanding of what's going to happen, those kinds of issues can be fairly easily worked around. So sir, you said you got your first meeting tentatively planned for January 24th. Do you know what you'll be talking about?
No, we haven't come up with that yet. I think I'd like to cover a wide range of topics and sort of ask people how they would like to proceed with this. Those who are interested in what their feelings are and how in how we would like to structure the group. So I think the first one is going to be primarily one of trying to come up as to what people are interested in and how they would like to go about discussing things and disseminating material and what they want to get out of it. I think that what we'd really like to do is try to allow people to get actionable plans of what they can do for what happens over the next 3 to 5 years. So we would like it to be more than just a discussion group, but also actually for people to determine how they can use the information in say, either a business or a career decision or a field of study that they would really like to pursue. So.
Very cool. Well, I think that's key to doing something like this. This is really the direction that we took the World Transformed in our second try at covering all those topics in a short period of time, was to make a good part of the discussion be about what's the relevance of this to me? What does this mean to my life? Because we can talk about a lot of these topics, and it's clear that there's a huge impact for the world, and people can hear that we're heading towards post-scarcity, or that artificial general intelligence is on its way, or that nanotechnology is going to revolutionize how we do so many different things. But the next question is, and that's relevant to me because, and there are a lot of reasons why it is. But that is something that increasingly I think we have to not leave unsaid. That increasingly is something that we have to ask people to start to put themselves in that position and say, well, how is that relevant to you? How is that going to impact your life? And what are you going to do about this exactly? What are you going to do about, for one thing, if this is a change that you're looking forward to, if this is a change that you're hoping will occur, what are you doing to help bring it about? If we're using our 80-20 rule and talking about the transformations that we're studiously trying to avoid, what are you doing to help avoid those things? And what impact day to day or over the long arc of your life are these things going to have? So with those questions in mind, Stephen, why don't we go ahead and start? We've got our own list, actually two lists of things that we think would be good topics for you to talk about, and by way of providing some guidance, we'll talk about those a little bit here for the rest of the program.
Sounds great.
Okay. And I think in the show description I described this as a list of the three top things and the 10 top things, and I believe I said the 10 first and then the three, but I'm going to go ahead and flip that order, and I want to talk about the three overarching topics that I think you definitely want to address. And we did our second of a three-part series on one of those just a couple of weeks ago, and we're going to be talking about these topics increasingly in the months to come. But the three overarching topics, the three major transformations that are occurring in the world, as we define them here on Fast Forward Radio, are, number one, the human imperative. And we've talked about that a lot over the years, but specifically we did a show that talked about that in some depth when we did our fifth anniversary show a while back. But that is just this ongoing process of improvement, this improving improvements, getting better at getting better. This is a huge driver of everything that is currently occurring. It's the basic impulse that human beings have and have demonstrated to try to improve their circumstances, to do that through economic change, to do that through social change, and most dramatically, particularly over the last couple of centuries, to do it through technological change. And we talked a little bit on the show when we got into this about the
law of accelerating returns, or
The other one is the law of unexpected results, and I just can't remember what the actual name of that is. But anyway, the fact that you often don't get the improvement you're looking for, that often it leads in a bad direction.
Unintended consequences.
Thank you. The law of unintended consequences. Why could I not think of those words? That pushes the human imperative in this, or I should say, pushes human progress in these odd directions, from which we then try to improve, and then more improvements occur. But I don't think people have grasped that this tendency is a huge driver of everything that's occurring, and I think people really need to get their heads around that one. And it's accompanied by two others that are just as big. One of them I'm calling the capability curve, and we talked about that actually a couple of weeks ago, which is, and again, we've talked about it many times over the years, which is just this simple, ongoing empowerment of individual human beings that technology has provided. The fact that an individual can do things that at one time only a large organization could do, or that today a large organization can do things, or even sometimes a small organization can do things that only a nation state could do a few decades ago. The fact that we're increasingly becoming more and more capable of doing more and more things faster is a massive driver of change, and it's one that has kind of snuck up on us. It has occurred so quickly and so subtly, I would say, in some ways, that people really aren't aware of how big the change is. And the third one is the possibility explosion. It's simply the fact that because the change is occurring in this geometric exponential fashion, because we're becoming so much more capable over time, the possibilities that are open to us are possibilities that we frequently have not even begun to imagine, such that perhaps now and certainly in the future, the biggest limiting factor to what we're able to accomplish may well be our own ability to imagine the set of circumstances that we're able to create for ourselves. So in a very broad conceptual way, I would say those are the three major transformations that Fast Forward Radio has always been about, that The Speculist is about, and that ultimately, if you get a group like this together, you're going to be talking about one or the other or all three of those every week in one shape or form, if not another. But I think it's important to be aware of what those are and to spend some time thinking about those and talking about those to get people up to speed on the fact that those changes are occurring, because they are such big drivers of the overall changes that we're seeing. I think there's just a little bit of philosophical grounding that needs to take place in order to make sense of that. What do you think, Stephen? Do you think that's I've overstated that, or if you were going to start a group like that, would you spend some time on that too?
Well, that's one approach. You know, the opposite approach would just be to dive into some of the specifics. Like, you know, you could walk in and say, "Hey guys, aren't 3D printers awesome?"
Right.
You could kind of take that and you know, you could talk about hey, did you get 23andMe? They're now offering a genome sequencing for $100. That news was just like in the last day or so, Phil. That's stuff like that. You can take specifics and then build towards, you know, the human imperative, the capability curve, the possibility explosion. All of those, and different times that you meet, you might start different ways. That's kind of what we've done here at Fast Forward Radio. Sometimes we almost get bogged down in the specifics, but that's fun. You know, I get a kick out of that as much as talking the big philosophical stuff too. So either way,
I think that's true. I think that probably when the show started, we were all about the specifics every single time, and we probably did a couple or three years of that, right? I mean, the show would be about a specific technological change, or we just do a grab bag show and we do 20, right, big ones in 1 hour and go through them. And this idea of classifying them and starting to look at how they relate to each other and starting to look at that kind of bigger philosophical picture, I don't think that really became a big part of the show until maybe we did that first World Transformer.
Yeah. Now, I mean, we had some ideas about it. You remember the old Spock's chessboard thing?
There you go.
Yes. Or my middle picture there. Phil, you had brought up previously how, you know, the chessboard, you know, analogy, if you put one piece of rice in the first square and then on and on, just doubling it every single square, pretty soon you got all the rice supply in the world by the time you're about halfway through the chessboard, right? Because that's
right.
The power of the exponential. It blows up on you before you can, you know, before you know what's happening. Then I took that idea and said, well, you know, we don't just have one chessboard. We don't just have accelerating technology in the sense of, you know, like Moore's Law giving us faster computers. It's also spawning all these other things. And you can think of them as other chessboards that feed back to the original base chessboard, and they feed each other, and they're all interconnected in ways that, you know, sometimes it's hard to predict how they're going to help each other. But I guess that was the beginning of my idea of how they all kind of interconnect. But,
yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about just exponentials generally. I note in the chat room that Sally's talking about the importance of introducing that idea if you're going to put a group like that together. And as we're talking about these top three topics, Stephen, and you mentioned the Spock chessboard. It's interesting to me how well that applies to each of those three things that you can actually make a good Spock chessboard case for the human imperative and for the capability curve and for the possibility explosion. It really applies across the board. So that one, you know, that one's got legs, Stephen. That one holds up. Gosh, you wrote that piece, what, like 7-8 years ago? Is that right? Has it been that long?
It's been. I think I wrote that one in 2004. Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, the idea, you're exploding in lots of different directions. The possibility explosion, it takes in genetics, it takes in artificial intelligence, you know, our capabilities with you know, personal manufacture, which I didn't really understand the possibility yet of 3D printing at that point, but that includes that. And that mental picture helped me understand how they interconnect. And so, anyway,
it's a good one.
I'm excited about the idea though of local groups taking this on. I think I'm inspired to see what I can get going here in Louisiana.
Well, you know what's going to be fun is to see what kinds of models emerge from these kinds of discussions. We've been talking about this stuff for a few years, and we've thrown various ideas out there. In the future, everything will be a coffee shop, Spock's chessboard, the three things I just said. It's going to be very interesting to see what people out in the world come up with. I think there are going to be a lot of great ideas, a lot of really interesting models, and a lot of really interesting approaches to this. So let's talk a little bit about our top 10. I mentioned the top three, and those are stated in almost completely abstract and philosophical terms. It starts to get a little closer to the specific technologies when we look at those 10 topics that made up the original The World Transformed. And so why don't we step through those, Stephen, and we can talk a little bit about why we think each of those is one of the top 10, and we can talk a little bit about where we think these might impact people's individual lives and why these topics are going to be important not only to us as members of society or members of humanity who are watching these major changes take place, but as individuals as well. And we can start with that first one, Stuart, which I mentioned just a few minutes ago, which is the big change that has to occur to our thinking. That was the original World Transformed topic. And I still maintain that this is maybe the one that has to be emphasized the most, and it's probably the transformation that you're most directly working on when you put a group like this together, or Stephen, that we're most directly working on when we do a program like this, because ultimately that's what we're doing, is we're trying to make people aware of the possibilities, and we're trying to help them see the world a little bit differently, and to think about the world a little bit differently. So when we described our thinking transformed in The World Transformed 2, I described it as a call to update our thinking in light of accelerating change,
with special emphasis on the role that education, creativity, and imagination have to play. Because I think all three of those are important. And education, in particular, has taken on a whole new meaning, even in the last couple of years, because of the new opportunities for education that have opened up. So, Stephen, if you were going to describe why this transformation is so big or why folks need to be focused on this, what would you have to say about it?
Well, you know, when I first became interested in these topics, one of the first things I wanted to do is connect with other people that, you know, were blown away by the same ideas. You know, I read, it wasn't The Singularity's Near, it was Kurt Powell's previous book, The Age of Spiritual Machines.
Right.
And it was prior to The Singularity's Near. And so I read that book, absolutely blew me away. And so what do? I get out on the internet, and eventually I run into you, Phil. And we start blogging together and eventually doing this show. That's one way that your thinking is transformed. You tend to want to connect with other people that see this as something huge, something that's real big. I think that's the first way your thinking is transformed. Then you begin to think about, well, how can I go ahead and push the future in my own life? For myself, I work in a law office, and you know, it's sort of a traditional kind of small firm. You know, it's been around for 30 plus years. Kind of has its way of doing things and locked into certain ways of doing things. And I just, well, the heck with that, I'm going digital, and you know, and transformed the way I do business within the firm. You know, and it's stuff like that. I mean, you begin to, be dissatisfied with some of the old ways of doing things, and figuring out new ways to do things better.
You know what I think it comes down to, and I think that's a great example, is that ultimately we start to expect things to be different.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the key. Throughout most of history, the safe bet has always been to expect that things will be roughly the same in the future as they've been in the past. But the arc of change isn't something that occurs within your lifetime, so you don't have to worry about it so much. I mean, there's changes that occur within your lifetime, but the world doesn't change in your lifetime unless you're living in some very rare, some extraordinary period of time. It may just be the recognition of the fact that, yes, you're now living in one of those, that this is one of those, you know, rare and extraordinary periods of time where the arc of change for the entire world is visible within a human lifetime. And it's visible within, if you're listening to this program, it's visible within your lifetime, that the kind of change we're talking about will occur then.
Well, the author William Gibson said, the future's here. It's just not evenly distributed. Okay.
Right.
You begin to get dissatisfied with, you know, being the part of the unevenly distributed group. You want to be up front, you know, and be pushing things yourself. So yeah, that's like you say, it's not just. I would add to what you just said, Phil. It's not just that you see things change in your own lifetime. It's that things are changing unevenly all around, and you tend to want to be a part of the faster moving group.
Yeah, and even if you don't expect a particular aspect to change, or even if you don't expect a particular area that you're looking at to change, if you start to engage the idea that it might, that all of these different technological developments, all these different social changes, somehow in the background on a level of Spock's chessboard that you're not currently on, might work together to bring about completely unexpected results, completely unexpected circumstances in any of those areas. Just looking at the world that way, I think you're in a much better position to deal with a lot of things that are going to happen. Even if the things that you start expecting aren't the ones that actually happen, if you expect things to change, you're probably in better shape than someone who doesn't expect them to change.
Yeah. All right.
I was just going to
jump in on the next thing.
You got it.
Next of the list of 10 is mortality. This is a topic that we talked about from the very earliest points in the show and at the Speculus as well. It's our expectation that lifespans are not always going to be what they are today. and that, you know, well, you know, it's something that the aging process is just a process. It's nothing magical. And if that's the case, if it's nothing magical going on in us growing older, then perhaps there are things that we can do to fix it. And we've been talking about that for years. So,
and it's a good example of an area where your thinking has to change, because you know, there are a few things that are so taken for granted or so established as the truth, than that, you know, you're born, you get old, and you die, right? That is the pattern for human life. And to take that one on immediately requires a change in thinking. And it goes beyond just the notion of people living longer, which is huge, particularly when we look at that idea taken to its logical conclusion, as articulated by people like Aubrey de Grey, where you say that aging itself is cured, the way we've cured other diseases, and human lifespan becomes all but indefinite. Even without taking that big leap, there are big changes that you can see occurring. Health span increasing, so that even if human beings aren't living 400 or 500 years, even if they're still continuing to live 70, 80, 90 years, but if the vital period of that is lengthened, such that rather than going through this long period of senescence, you just reach senescence right towards the end, and suddenly an additional 5 or 10 or even 15 years of, you know, vital and healthy life is added to a human lifespan. That's a huge difference. And,
yeah,
you know, you get to ask these wonderful questions around, well, what are you going to do with that time? You know, what are you going to do with that that portion of your life that has been opened up to you? And this is where notions like the possibility explosion really come into play, because we've had this notion throughout history, not only of, you know, you're born, you get old, and you die, but also the notion that if you're 50 years old, there are fewer possibilities open for you than if you're 30 years old. If you're 70, there are fewer than if you're 50. And that idea itself might start turning on its head, which is a really remarkable thing to have happened in all of human history, and we may be facing it right now.
Imagine someone that's got the wisdom of an 80-year-old and the energy of a 20-year-old.
Exactly.
You know, I can't wait to see that, and not just one or two people like that. There are already one or two people like that in the world. I can think of a couple in my life, but armies of people like that, you know, getting together and doing, you know, just wonderful things. That's awesome. Okay, material world. The material world transformed.
And this is one of our favorites.
We talk about it a lot.
It may be the original topic that kind of got the speculus going. I was very excited about nanotechnology at that time, and I had just attended my first Foresight Vision Weekend. So I think it's a big driver of our thinking on this program, and I think it stands to be a big enabling technology for an awful lot of what we're talking about on this list of 10 topics generally. But essentially, we're talking about the idea of the production of goods becoming a digital technology in the same way that processing of information is currently a digital technology. So that nanotechnology makes it possible for things to be produced to molecular specificity, and for ultimately just about anything that anyone wants to be produced to be produced. This really is a big enabler for the later transformation that we're talking about, which is wealth transform, but it comes up a little bit later. But even before you get to the big economic consequences of it, the material day-to-day life consequences of this kind of technology are staggering. The thought of what we will be able to do, of what our technologies will be able to provide for us, is really hard to get your head around, and one that that bears an awful lot of discussion, and one that we see growing closer just about every day.
And, you know, before we even get to nanotech, nanofactories, that sort of thing, there, you know, we have 3D printers before we get to that. So that's something that we don't have to wait for 20, 30 years to begin to see. 3D printers are here now, and they're becoming more and more accessible, and we will begin to do our own things with it and pass around our own blueprints. Hey, this was a cool thing I did with my 3D printer, you know, and then somebody else grabs that and that CAD program, and then they tweak it a little bit, and they come up with their own ideas, and you got a whole community building on that. So, you know, that's happening right now.
Yeah, I don't think people recognize. People look at the 3D printing revolution. They look at the maker revolution. They say, "Well, that's really cool. That's a really amazing technology." But that is the beginning of redefining the basic relationship between human beings and ultimately the material world. I think is not something that people have their head around quite yet, and it's one that we have to keep talking about. And speaking of things that are hard to get your head around. How about this next one, which is Humanity Transformed, where we talk about the kinds of changes that people are able to make and increasingly going to be able to make to their own bodies, to their own minds, basically enhancing their performance, enhancing their capabilities, and ultimately structurally changing parts of their body, changing how their body functions and the kinds of things that they're able to do. We look at this increasingly as a factor in sports, and it's viewed very negatively around people, you know, doping or use of steroids or those kinds of things. But what we're going to quickly see is some of these other technologies will converge around the desire that people have to do things better, to have bodies that last longer, to have bodies that are more healthy and more capable. And these changes are going to become much, much more powerful, and they're going to become much, much more subtle. And they will be done frequently at the genetic level, which means at the molecular level, meaning that we're talking about something very similar to nanotechnology, kind of the ultimate original nanotechnology, which is biology. And the whole question of what does it mean to be a human being starts to get to starts to be one that we have to ask and consider very seriously.
I think our acceptance of these technologies is an exponential inverse relationship with the power and the subtlety. Does that make sense, Bill? I mean, the more powerful and the more subtle these technologies become, the greater our level of acceptance of them will come will become the less objections will make seem to make sense. I mean, you know, if you can walk around with bionics that allow you to do all these amazing things, run 20 miles an hour for an hour, who's gonna object to that if you can't even tell that there's a difference in a person that has that sort of enhancement, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, maybe someone that's racing against them, but otherwise, there's not going to be a lot of objection to that.
And finally, people are going to look to their left, they're going to look to their right, and they're going to see people able to do things that they themselves would like to be able to. Actually, I think the whole controversy around human enhancement disappears as soon as there's an effective treatment for obesity, right? they can be swallowed in pill form, or just they can be taken along those lines. People will accept just about any change that allows that sort of thing. Or, you know, we've talked with Brian Wong and others about things like myostatin inhibitors. You know, something that would enable people to become very physically fit without the kind of grueling exercise that they've had to do in the past. And of course,
are the negative consequences of steroids. You know, myostatin inhibition does not have the same problems that steroids does. And as soon as that becomes readily available, I think I'm going to be in line for that.
Yeah, well, I think I would be too. And actually, that one probably cures obesity. It kind of comes along for the ride. Okay, what about the next one, intelligence transformed?
Well, you know, I've always said, you know, if I had a choice of a superpower, I would choose super intelligence. And why is that? Because if I'm super intelligent, then I can be Tony Stark, and I can make myself a superhero in every other way.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I get everything else for free. It comes along for the ride if you've got intelligence. Yeah, this is you know, machine intelligence is increasing exponentially. And you know, that's so we see things like Watson winning against the Jeopardy champions, and now potentially becoming the best cancer doctor in the world. Watson, it'll be Dr. Watson very soon. So you know, that's some exciting stuff, and we're seeing that. And you know, obviously our hope is that we're able as humans to go along for the ride too. We're not just left behind. But that's part of the intelligence explosion right there.
It really is, and it's interesting how like with the enhancement technology, how subtly this one is occurring and how it's sneaking up on us. We see big things like Watson winning on Jeopardy, but a tool like Siri, or now the new Google version of the same kind of idea, how quickly that becomes integrated into people's lives, and how quickly that becomes viewed by us as part of our own intelligence, and how quickly we become, if not dependent on that, at least completely reliant on that, and able to proceed with, you know, accomplishments in our lives that would not have been possible without achieving that level of intelligence. So this huge change that occurs when artificial general intelligence emerges. But even prior to that, life in the world gets really different because of this major increase in the amount of intelligence, just sheer raw intelligence that's available to all of us.
Absolutely. Well, this is sort of an aside, but I understand Google Maps, their app is coming out for the for iOS, the Apple phones and everything. I can't wait, because presently the map apps are not all that great on the Apple iPhones. And so, anyway, I'm going to download that this evening. It apparently just came out.
Oh, okay. I keep hearing about that, and I've had really good luck with the Apple Maps. I must be the only person who's been enjoying the...
Maybe you've just been going to places as well, because apparently there's some big problems in other places.
I've lucked out on where I've been going. I think that must be it. Okay. What about the next one? We got to move quickly through the rest of these. Reality Transformed, where we talk about the possibility explosion, and one of the reasons that so many more possibilities are open to us is because technology enables us to experience things, have subjective experiences that don't require all of the real world infrastructure that those experiences used to require, which is a complicated way of saying that we can fake it and we can pretend things and we can experience things through digital technology that at one time we weren't able to, leading up to eventually we'll have something along the lines of real full immersive virtual reality, which will at that point enable us to experience just about anything that we want to experience. That's the big end game. But what we see leading us there are these very subtle step-by-step measures by which we become increasingly citizens of a digital world, residents of a digital world. And it happens in such a way that we barely notice it happening. But if we step back for a moment and look, we say, oh, yeah, we increasingly live in a world that's augmented by digital technology, or that that contains a lot of digital technology, or that is sort of defined by it. And it's not too many steps from there to a world that's actually made up of that technology. And that's very much the direction we're heading.
I think virtual reality is huge, obviously, but I think along the way, augmented reality could be at least as important. You know, with technologies like Google Glasses and other, you know, even on contact lenses, and then later even built into your head, you know, you can have a digital overlay on the real world. And I think that that technology may turn out to be as important as disappearing into virtual worlds. But, yeah. That's,
I think so. Yeah.
Big stuff. Okay, next thing, Wealth Transformed. you know, obviously when we have the ability to you know, enjoy virtual worlds where we're living as you know, as billionaires, sexy immortal billionaires, right?
That's right.
You know, and also you have things like 3D printing and maybe nanofactories eventually. These things, you're living in a world of complete abundance. You know, the things that remain scarce might be the front queue, the front end of the queue, and you know, standing in to get into the movie. You know, things
right.
like that, or stuff like that. Anyway, that's the it becomes you know, you got a world that's pretty much people have what they want, and that's
you know,
big deal.
Stuart and I were actually talking about this one the other day, and one of the things that that we've talked about on this program when this topic has come up, and it dovetails very nicely into the next topic, which is our fears transformed, is that there are significant potential downsides to the technologies that enable abundance. There are significant potential downsides to the automation in terms of what impact it could have on the way the economy works now. And the question
right.
of whether the transition from our current economy to that future economy is going to be a smooth one, a bumpy one, or a really god-awful one is something that it has to be addressed. It's something that people have to be aware of and have to be thinking about, because these changes are definitely coming. And it's not just a question of where we end up, but very much how we get there.
Right. And we may be beginning to feel some of that now. I mean, you know, some of our unemployment picture may very well be some of these technologies just, you know, taking, you know, removing jobs from the workforce that formerly were there. So, yeah, my thought, bumpy ride ahead. But, you know, eventually it gets better. So, anyway, fears transformed.
Well, our fears transformed, you know what, we're going to talk about that one at greater length next week when we have our End of the World special, and we will spend a little bit of time talking seriously about the absolute existential risks that humanity faces, many of them enabled by the kinds of technologies we're talking about here. But it also just puts us in mind that 80-20 principle that we try to keep in mind. We talk all the time about the good stuff that can happen. And I think that's good for about 80% of our attention, but we need to spend about 20% of our attention looking at the downsides, looking at the risks, and preventing any of a number of really, really frightening outcomes that could possibly result from these things. Now, the final two, we're not going to try to summarize to any great extent, except to say that one of them, the future transform, talks about the technological singularity, talks about reaching this point beyond which we really can't imagine what's going to happen next. And Human Destiny Transformed, Stuart, my recommendation is you try to get John Smart to either call in or come visit your group. That's the best way to deal with that one. That one is all about looking at the very distant future and the ultimate resolution of the question, what's this whole human imperative about? What's this whole human experience about? So we dashed through those very quickly, but I think that there's plenty there for putting that kind of a group together. And Stuart, we look forward to having you back on the program to talk about this again in the future and see how you're doing with this list and maybe how you've enhanced it yourself.
I would be delighted to do so. I look forward to it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. And Stephen, I guess we got to jump very quickly to our music.
Yes, the music this week is Counting Down by the Brooks Young Band.
Well, how appropriate, Counting Down, because we're in our waning seconds here. So I'll just thank everyone for listening and remind you that we're on twice next week. We've got Ramez Nun talking about his book Nexus on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we've got our big End of the World special. Hope you'll be here for both of those programs. And until next time, live to see it.